At seminary, I was told that after 3 years as minister of a church, you can start repeating Unitarian Universalist jokes, since there are a limited number of them. Actually, I just made that up, since I have used this one before. A skeptical atheist Unitarian Universalist died and, to his complete disbelief, went to heaven. At the pearly gates, St. Peter told him, "Before you can enter, you must prove to me that you've led a good life." The UU said, "Before I do that, you'll have to prove to me that all this is real and not just a delusion I'm having caused by my brain hallucinating in the throes of death." St. Peter was dumbfounded. Then a voice came from within the gates shouting, "Let him in, he's one of us." Thanks to our Universalist side, we UUs tend not to think in terms of a judgment day or any kind of Armageddon or second coming of Jesus. We do not profess to know what happens after death, nor do we have some definitive theology of death. And yet, as individuals, perhaps we do have some sense of what death means and brings. At one of the Friday dinners that Sue and I have been doing for members and friends, we were using the cards known as table topics. And one of them read, "Have you ever had an experience that led you to believe in angels or ghosts?" Of the six of us around the table, I was the only one who essentially said no. And I was intrigued by the stories that the other five people had, however. Stories and experiences that were inexplicable and actually quite beautiful. And so led people to consider alternatives to the common notion of simple annihilation after death. Here, though, is what we do know. We all know how painful it can be to lose an animal, a friend, a partner, a family member. We all know grief, and we all deal with it in different ways. Here's one of Anne Lamott's stories, which she tells in a wonderful work, Traveling Mercies. In May of 1992, I went to Mexico with Sam, my son, who was then 2.5. At the time, Pammy, a best friend, had been battling breast cancer for 2 years. I also had a boyfriend with whom I spoke 2 or 3 times a day, whom I loved and who loved me. Then in early November of that year, the big eraser came down and got Pammy. And it also got the boyfriend, from whom I parted by mutual agreement. But the grief was huge. All those years I felt for the great lie that grief should be gotten over as quickly as possible and as privately. But what I've discovered since is that the lifelong fear of grief keeps us in a barren, isolated place, and that only grieving can heal grief. That passage of time will lessen the acuteness, but time alone, without the direct experience of grief, will not heal it. I'm pretty sure that it is only by experiencing that ocean of sadness in a naked and immediate way that we come to be healed, which is to say that we come to experience life with a real sense of presence and spaciousness and peace. I began to learn this when Sam and I went back to the same resort in Mexico 3 months after Pammy's death. This time I was also with Tom, an extremely funny Jesuit and sober alcoholic, and his best friend, Pat. Grief, as I read somewhere once, is a lazy Susan. One day it is heavy and underwater, and the next day it spins and stops at loud and rageful, and the next day at wounded keening, and the next day numbness. Silence. I was hoarse for the first 6 weeks after Pammy died and my romance ended, from shouting in the car and crying, and I had blisters on the palm of one hand from hitting the bed with my tennis racket, bellowing in pain and in anger. But on the first morning in Mexico, the lazy Susan stopped at feelings of homesickness. I am no longer convinced that you're supposed to get over the death of certain people. But little by little, pale and swollen around the eyes, she writes, I began to feel a sense of reception, that I was beginning to receive the fact of Pammy's death, the finality. And I let it enter me. The depth of the feeling continued to surprise and threaten me, but each time it hit again and I bore it, I would discover that it hadn't washed me away. Don't get me wrong, grief sucks. It really does. Unfortunately, though, avoiding it robs us of life, of the now, of a sense of living spirit. Tom and I ended up going snorkeling together. I floated off by myself. I daydreamed about Pammy. Near the end, she said of her young daughter, all I have to do to get really depressed is to think about Rebecca. And all I have to do to get really joyful is to think about Rebecca. I floated around slowly, crying. The mask filled up with tears. I could have used a windshield wiper. I felt very lonely. I thought maybe I wouldn't feel so bad if I didn't have such big pieces of Pammy still inside me. But then I thought, I want those pieces in me for the rest of my life, whatever it costs me. I watched the small fish swim in and out of the feathery sea plants and thought of beautiful, wild, happy Rebecca. This made my heart hurt too, yet I began to feel a little lighter inside. And just then, Tom came paddling over. And I became aware of his presence beside me, although I couldn't actually see his face. And for the longest time, we lay there bobbing on the water's surface, face down, lost in our own worlds, barely moving, side by side. We all experience grief. It is like a lazy Susan. I would like now to invite you to think of someone who is dear to your heart, who has died or is dying. And if you wish to do so, to come forward and light a candle for this individual.